Hey, we're just about to jump into the episode, but before we do, did you know we have a junior-friendly Discord community? It's completely free to join. If you want to join us, the link is in the description. We'd love to have you. All right, enjoy the episode. Welcome back to another podcast episode where we help aspiring developers get jobs and junior developers grow. With this new series, we're going to go ahead and continue it. I want to start introducing other tech-related positions besides software engineering, or where you can use your coding skills to essentially still make quite a bit of money and explore different areas of tech where it might be more suited for you. So for this episode, we're going to be diving into what a developer advocate is. I'll probably kind of touch on developer relations, maybe developer relations engineer. It seems to blend a little bit, but I'm going to learn more about that. So I invited on Mike. He is a developer advocate for Stripe currently. And I'm excited to have this conversation. Thanks for coming on, Mike.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me, Don.
For sure. Let's kind of just start with a little bit about yourself.
Yeah. Okay. So my name is Mike Bifulco. I'm a developer advocate at Stripe. I've been at Stripe for 2.5 months or so now. I started in March of this year of 2022. I, in past lives, worked for Google as a developer advocate on the Google Assistant team. I was a startup founder at one point. I founded a company called Simple, which was a SaaS company for helping independent scale co-working businesses run their operation. I also worked for Microsoft and was technical director for an online code school called Gymnasium in the past. My background is kind of in front-end development, design, and sort of generalist engineering. I also went to university once upon a time for both mechanical engineering and computer science, and kind of very obviously made my choice to go one way or not the other once I graduated. And that's kind of where I'm at today.
Interesting. Okay, so a lot of education behind you. So you were aiming for front end. What happened with that?
Yeah, actually, it's funny. I would say that I largely wasn't really aiming for it, but I kind of found my way there by hook or by crook. My undergrad degree was in computer science, or one of them was. And I took a very traditional course of computer science study when I was in school. I went to UConn up in Connecticut. That program was largely designed around very traditional engineering stuff like algorithms and data structures and all the things that you see on, typical engineering interviews and challenges and tests and course and things like that. My first job out of school, I was working at Microsoft. I was hired as an engineer into Microsoft's consulting organization and found very quickly that I had an affinity for not making the inner workings of an application go, but more so making it make sense for the end user using it. So at the time, that was around 2009, was really, really like the beginning of user experience becoming a big deal for lots of these companies. Microsoft obviously was no exception to that. And I found myself drawn more to the front end because I was really interested in making sure that the person on the other end of the device could look at what was going on, understand it, and take advantage of the software. And so I went from being sort of just a traditional engineer to someone who was really interested in design. I actually did 95% of a graduate degree in human computer interaction, which is the sort of intersection of like art and psychology, and basically is the study of what people do, what they're thinking, what psychological phenomena you can take advantage of when someone looks at software. And so for a while, I used to say that like if I was doing my job really well, you wouldn't know I was there at all if you used something that I designed. You would be able to look at your phone or a website or whatever it may be and just use the thing and not think about like, oh, what am I doing? How do I accomplish the task? So that's what drew me to the front end. Invariably, I sort of stuck with that in various roles throughout the years and kind of have found that to be one of my strong suits. But really, it's all about thinking about how people use things, what the goal is, how you're getting things done, and sort of translating between engineering requirements and end user interactions.
That's interesting. It really sounds like I like that. So if you're doing your job effectively, the user is not even going to know that you exist, essentially, or that your position exists. And that's a pretty cool way to look at essentially building a quality product and being able to provide, maybe the right documentation or the right instruction for it. But, so I come from psychology. I got a psychology bachelor's and didn't do anything with it for a little bit, right? But I came into software engineering completely fascinated with just how the user interacts with the website, how they feel about it, right? And it's, to me, that's really interesting. So I'm getting stuck in a lot of conversations with design, with UX, and they're like, okay, Dom, we don't need you for this, but I want to be here, right? I want to learn. And I was just always fascinated with UX. So I mean, you know, in the future, you know, if I wasn't doing what I was doing, becoming a developer advocate sounds like something that might be up my alley. It sounds really interesting. What exactly was it about becoming a developer advocate, developer relations, that like really attracted you to it? Was it the user? Was it creating materials for the user to explain the product? Like, what exactly was it?
Yeah, so that's a really good question and really poignant. There's a whole bunch of history between me starting as in the user experience stuff and then jumping into developer relations sort of years later. But it follows a familiar theme. So what it boils down to is I really enjoy the developer relations side of things because it's a bit about that journey of getting someone to learn how to do something, teaching someone how to do something, and seeing them synthesize information into making something that accomplishes a goal or solves a problem that they have. For me, I'm also the first to tell you that I'm a bit of an extrovert. So it's a lot of like getting to meet people and create things that people interact with and in some sense put myself in the spotlight when it makes sense to, but otherwise give people the opportunity to shine to make something for themselves. I mentioned before that I had founded a startup in the past. When I was working on my startup, one of the things we did there is we built this community of end users, of owners of co-working spaces. And in building that community, it was really powerful to see people learning from each other. So to give you a concrete example, if you, let's say you live in Iowa and you run your own co-working facility and I live in New Hampshire and I own my own, you and I are not adversarial. We don't have competition. I'm never going to lose business to you through that. So it really makes sense for me to learn from your experiences and for me to understand what you've done to make your business work and vice versa, I can share with you. Developer advocacy is very similar. And as I was building that company, I was working with lots of developer advocates from companies like Google. The Firebase developer advocacy team helped me quite a bit when I was running into trouble setting up the software there. Stripe, my current employer, we were, the company that I ran Simple was three people, and we were probably one of the very first companies that benefited from Stripe having a developer advocacy program. And really in practice, what that meant is that when we needed help, we would sort of get to our wits end, try something out for long enough. And when we couldn't figure out how to accomplish the goal we had, we would contact the people at Stripe and would get either useful help for like, hey, here's how you do this, or maybe this thing is like what you want to do isn't doable yet, but we can talk to the engineering team about how we would accomplish that. And so I found that it was really cool to sort of make that connection between one thing and the other, and be able to both create a product that was doing something, but also influence the product that we were using to build our stuff. When I jumped into developer advocacy, it was because I really, really valued helping people. And I really like the idea of being able to do things that gets people from A to B in a way that they might not have considered before. So, I'm a very lucky guy. I've had a really lucky life, and I'm the first one to recognize that. And I really like the idea that through my work, I can give back to people and reach people who I otherwise wouldn't meet, and get them to maybe start a company or create a product or grow their product or whatever the case may be in a way that they wouldn't have been able to do or they might not have done otherwise. And people like me and my colleagues help them to do those things every day. I derive a lot of satisfaction from that personally, and I think it's really cool to see people grow things. And that is a big driver for why I like developer advocacy so much. And it uses a lot of the skills that I have. I suspect you and I will probably talk about this a little bit, but there's a lot of flavors of developer advocate, of people who I work with who have lots of varied skill sets and do lots of different things. And I'm able to take advantage of the things that I've grown throughout my career to assemble something that helps the people around me, the engineering teams I work with, the other advocates on my team, the developers who are building stuff with Stripe at the moment, but with Google in the past. And that's a really kind of magical thing for me. And it's something that I think maybe your typical developer persona probably wouldn't love doing, but it hits all the right marks for me, and it's a super fun job, and I really enjoy doing it.
honestly, how would an introvert do with this position?
Yeah. So I work with a lot of introverts, and I think that's maybe surprising to some people. There's a couple of different ways that it works. There's definitely some introverts who like prefer to sort of get all of their extroversion out in bursts. And that might be like, hey, I'm a super introverted person or even a mildly introverted person. I don't mind getting on stage for an hour, even if it makes me really anxious because I like to teach people and that's a valuable thing to me. There are also versions of developer advocacy that have nothing to do with standing out under the bright spotlight with a microphone in front of you and talking to people. Some developer advocates do things like just record videos in the comfort of their home. That's really easy for them to do or something they enjoy doing. There are developer advocates who do things like just write blog posts. And if you're a really good writer and you're good at teaching people with tutorials, you can do it that way. Even still, there are flavors of developer advocacy. You kind of mentioned before developer advocacy or developer relations engineers who do things like build tools and take feedback from devs to build things that make their experience as a developer a little better. So it's something that can fit a lot of introversion, extroversion. And I think we kind of all fall on a spectrum there somewhere and waver back and forth between how much we want to be introverted or extroverted naturally. And honestly, gosh, if I had to put it into percentage, I think only a minority of the folks that I've worked with in developer advocacy are truly extroverted, and a lot more people kind of fall in the middle.
Interesting. Some of what you were describing, essentially, if you are a writer, maybe you create blog posts. You had talked about potentially like creating, correct me if I'm wrong, but documentation around like how to use a product. I just had a technical writer on, and that's going to be released. It should have already been released once this is released. Just get thrown off on the schedule, but
sure.
It almost sounds like the exact same thing, but more for the written form of a developer advocate. Mm. So I guess like when I think of developer advocate, I know you're going to dive into the different flavors. I guess initially I pictured being in the spotlight, you know, having a mic in front of you, recording videos, et cetera. But it sounds like there are a lot of different flavors. Do you ever work with technical writers? And how would they be different from developer advocates that focus more on writing?
Yeah, sure. So, this is probably something that varies depending on the team you're at, depending on the company you're at, depending on the size of the company and the maturity of the organization. What I'll say is in my current job at Stripe and my prior job at Google, people who were in roles that were called technical writers or sounded like a technical writer typically worked on developing technical documentation. So more often than not, that is stripe.com/docs, writing the things that appear on that page, right? Here's how you use this API. Here's what this library does. Here's, you know, step 1 through 10 of how to implement something and maybe a blurb explaining the value proposition of that and whatnot. Developer advocates tend to do more of the somewhere in the neighborhood of the art of the possible, right? Like, hey, here's an idea for what you might do with Stripe's APIs. Here's how you could spin up something that would allow you to sell products online with, you know, tying a bunch of things together. So Intercom and Remix and Vue and Nuxt and all these things. Whereas technical writers tend to focus squarely on making documentation really great, making it really understandable, and making sure that it's accurate as well.
Okay. Appreciate you clarifying. I think that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. And I can see that being a little bit different depending on the size of the company, the type, et cetera. Yeah. And I think, you know what, so we're going to dive into how do you become a developer advocate, right? But before we do that, you had mentioned there's different flavors. Can you kind of go into a little bit more detail about that?
Sure. So again, this is one of those things that the actual nomenclature will vary depending on the company and the size of the team. But in general, there's this thing called developer relations, which in maybe 5-10 years ago used to be called developer evangelism at some companies. Some companies might just call it developer advocacy, but the whole idea is your job is to help developers to take the product that your company is building and go do something with it, and accomplish their something that helps them with their problems, or build a product or whatever it may be. So the goal of a developer relations organization is a lot like what that sounds like, is to form relationships with developers to make sure that they're getting what they need, that they have help implementing things when they need it, that they know where to go for technical support, but also to then be the liaison back to the organization and say, hey, this actually looks like something that's maybe not doing exactly what our developer users want. We should go iterate on this or make it better, or maybe even be the first customer, the zeroth customer of tooling, and test things out before it goes out to developers. So to take on the persona of someone who's never seen this stuff before, build from scratch with a new feature. First of all, does it work? How easy was that? What stumbling blocks did you come across? How can we highlight those sorts of problems and understand how these developers use it a little more? These organizations are built up of several different job roles. One, the technical writer, which we just talked about, will sort of write the documentation and help develop that. There's developer advocates like myself who form the relationships with the external folks, do the liaisoning to the engineering teams, and build things like demos and conference talks or podcasts or videos or blogs, whatever the case may be. And then there's, in some organizations, also engineers who live in these developer relations orgs that will go and do things like build tooling that's very specifically for developers. So put that concretely at Stripe, we have lots of products. Like, we have products that will let you submit payments online with credit cards, right? That's a product that Stripe builds. The developer tooling that we might build for something like that is, here's a command line interface that you could use to make that faster, or to test your thing, or to deploy it more quickly, or whatever the case may be. Often in some organizations, developer relations engineers will go and build that kind of thing and maintain it and make sure that it's useful in speeding up the experience of developers. There's a lot of DREs who will go and build like extensions for Visual Studio Code, or tools for CI that help to verify that what's being built is working, that kind of a thing. I also haven't covered a lot of other roles that happen in these organizations. There's managers, obviously, who manage the teams and make sure that everyone's working and the ship is moving along. Project managers who will track projects from start to finish, make sure that everything is happening on schedule, that all the constituents are being consulted, et cetera, et cetera. There's program managers who will do things like look at the larger picture of the scope of a product and how that fits into the world. Often the question is, are we building a product that makes sense? Is there a job to do with this thing that we're helping to get done? And in a DevRel organization, that could be something like, are we building the tooling that our developers need to get their job done? And really kind of anything else you'll see in an engineering organization can pop up as well. We have folks who work in marketing that are specific to developer marketing, where their job is to help us write, say, like a great Twitter campaign that gets developers to want to try to build things using our tools. They might help us plan big events like big conferences or big moments throughout the year where we want to land something that's impactful, that gains momentum on Twitter or Y Combinator or whatever makes sense there. Not Y Combinator, Hacker News. All those things. And so there's a lot of pieces that add up to this thing. And really, really, as you can imagine, all of those roles involve different skill sets, different backgrounds, are requiring sort of multidisciplinary and cross-functional collaboration that is pretty complex, but thankfully requires a diversity of backgrounds and experiences and skills as well.
It sounds potentially very multidisciplinary. When I hear a lot, this is interesting. So I think it's pretty inviting to people of different personalities and different backgrounds, which it almost seems like, it potentially is a second or third position that you can bring a lot. Like, if you work on a tech team, you're building out a product, at least, like, you could probably bring that experience into a developer relations role or developer advocacy role. But you expanded on quite a bit, and it sounds like there are a lot of flavors. And when I hear this, I almost think, wow, how does anyone know any specific path to become this? Like,
Yeah.
What is the path forward? What are the skills that you need to build? Should you have experience, most likely? Should you not? Can you share that?
Sure. Yeah. So there's good news and bad news there. The good news is that there's not a specific path. And what that means is that lots of different people can find their way into this kind of work. And really, depending on the team you work on, it might be more favorable to someone who has a strong engineering background, might be more favorable to someone who has a strong marketing background or content production background, depending on the needs of the business and the product. The bad news from that is if you're someone who needs like a dotted line to follow from A to B, that can be pretty intimidating. But I'll say that I work with people who have strict engineering backgrounds, who went to school for engineering, like myself, who somehow ended up in developer advocacy. I work with folks who started in completely different parts of the world, working in finance. One of the most talented developer advocates I've ever worked with was studied sociology and came from like just a world that was so different from me, you know, hunkered over a computer in undergrad trying to write algorithms, but really, really great developer advocate because they understand people. They understand how people learn and the things that go into sharing information and making sure that people sort of get the things they need out of the world. Like yourself, psychology can be a pretty important thing too, right? Like there's a lot that goes into making people want to do something or giving them the results that trigger the dopamine receptors that make things feel valuable. There's folks who I've worked with who have business backgrounds as well, who come from like the finance world, who understand, enough finance to be really smart in fintech, which is what Stripe does, but also somewhere along the way started dabbling in software development and have become really good software engineers and can go and build things to accomplish a task, even though they may never have taken a computer science final on algorithms in their life. That, as it turns out, doesn't really matter if the job that you're doing is something that's more about producing educational information or showing people how to do something.
I think it's a really interesting role. I really do. And I feel like with this type of role, one of the most important things that I'm hearing is just kind of an interest for, you're almost like a bridge between whatever parties that you focus on, but it sounds like you really need to care about people and how they use a product. Is there like, is there a developer advocacy role that's outside of product? Cause like, even when you think about like software engineering, sometimes it's agency work and you take in clients and you essentially build a website and move on to the next product. You're learning tons of technologies. So yeah, are there any alternatives outside of like a very specific product?
Sure. Yeah. So one example I'll give, I'm completely unaffiliated with, but LogRocket is a company that makes tooling for building web applications and mobile applications that essentially sets up really good logging for your app. Truly what the product does doesn't matter in the context of this discussion, but they have a really tremendous content production pipeline where the LogRocket blog has demos and illustrations of how to do things with like any other product under the sun. Their whole thing is they'll give you a tutorial on making a mobile app for iOS one day. The next day they'll show you how to build with Supabase. The next day they'll be doing something on Vue. And they, I'm sure they take external collaborations, but I would guess that they probably have developer advocates or something like a developer advocate working on their staff. That's just like, hey, your job is to just go try stuff and build interesting tutorials. Because by showing authentically that like we're a company that invests in building interesting things, invariably someone's going to get to our blog and then say, hey, what's LogRocket? Click on the try the thing. And you may grow customers from that. So there are certainly cases where you're not tied to building the product. There are also some developer advocates that work more squarely in marketing positions, where the developer advocacy org, instead of driving revenue through developers building with the thing and drawing you money in whatever business model you're set up, maybe the goal at this point in the company is to grow the name. And so the goal of a developer advocate might instead be to just reach as many people as possible. And that could be showing up at events, getting people to do hackathons, sponsoring things, all kinds of stuff that are a lot more marketing-y than engineering-y. And so Yeah, it really depends on the company, which may not be a satisfying answer, but it's also, as someone who might be seeking a career in developer advocacy, one of the things to do is to look for companies that are doing things that sort of mesh with what you want to do, and try and form a relationship with them, right? Show them what you're doing, show some interest in them. If they have job openings, obviously apply to those. But like the really cool thing about developer advocates is that their job is to go and make relationships with people. Right. Get to know people. So you sort of have an in if you're able to demonstrate that, like, hey, I'm interested in what you're doing. I can do interesting things. I'm willing to try things and, maybe fail sometimes, maybe dabble in the new thing and just kind of get a 100 or 200 level understanding of what's going on and just play around with things. You kind of asked about how people can get into developer advocacy, and it's tricky. But it really just depends on who you are and sort of you exercising your desire to try things out and your desire to play around with, whatever tooling interests you at the time, for sure.
That's really good advice. I like that. I almost think if I personally were going this route and bringing my engineering background into it, I think I would probably focus on companies where I love their product, that I've used it. And when I use a product for a long time, I probably submit more bugs, more suggestions than anyone else. I do. Maybe I annoy the companies by, but I feel like those are also the companies that I probably should seek out to see if they have that type of position. Would you say maybe that's a good starting point to focus on products that you love?
Sure. Yeah. So two good bits there for literally any job in the world that you're trying to apply to. It doesn't matter what skill set you're getting. I think it's a really good idea to apply to companies that you love. This is advice I'll give to anyone for any job. Make a list of 50 companies that you love, regardless of whether or not you think they would hire someone like you, and go try and meet them. Go tell them that, like, hey, I love your thing. I don't know how I can be useful here, but I want to be. Let's figure something out. It doesn't always work. And, it can be tricky in companies where they're totally like 180 degrees off from your skill set, but it's an interesting thing to do. And you'd be surprised the responses you can get. So one, starting with companies you love is a great idea. I also think, Don, if I asked you, like, in your journeys building software, if you've interacted with developer advocacy groups or teams or companies that you've liked, you could probably identify a few. And if it doesn't come to mind straight away, one of the things I would ask you is, have you ever opened an issue on something on GitHub and actively participated in a discussion there with that team? That, in a sense, you opening the issue and having that discussion is you doing developer advocacy. You're saying, hey, I'm a developer. I've got a problem. Here's what I'm bumping into. Am I misunderstanding this, or is this a real bug, or whatever the case may be? Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That's really good advice. Like you said, that advice could expand. Quite frankly, to a lot of aspiring developers, it's a pretty oversaturated market at the entry level. A lot of people want to get into it. And there's opportunity there, but I really see people standing out when, they've reached out to a developer on the team that has a blog and you're like, oh, this is really cool. I love accessibility. You talk about this all the time. Is that what your team prioritizes? I mean, just any type of opener that can really help get you noticed. So I guess thinking more specifically for software engineering, so people that are a little bit more, they love coding and they want to blend that into developer advocacy. Oh my God, developer ad. Can I not say this word? Advocacy. they want to blend it in, but they don't really know how much they should learn how to code. Or how much code they should actually learn. They don't really know, okay, what stack do I even learn? Because, it's great if you get hired at the company that you really want to work with. You can research the stack and you could kind of dive into that and learn more the tooling and the frameworks that company uses. But, realistically, you have to also apply to other companies, right? So how do you... If you're just essentially building like internal tooling for developers potentially... How do you know how much, what you need to learn and how much of it you need to learn to actually get hired as a developer advocate?
Sure. So I will say that I don't think it's a requirement at all to be skilled with the thing for the company you're working at to get a job there. In my case, I was familiar with Stripe before because I built a business on Stripe's APIs. That's really cool and really great for me, and it worked out super well. But you don't have to go sacrifice a couple years of your life building a business on Stripe to be a developer advocate at Stripe necessarily. I will also say that I think that in the world we're living in right now, even if you're not yet an engineer, you're not confident in your engineering skills. There are many tools out there where you can go and use people's products, companies' products, without writing a single line of code. And I think we're turning a corner in the technical industry altogether, where we're starting to recognize that like there's this massive wedge of the pie of people building cool things with no code at all. That is effectively developer advocacy, even though they're not developing with code. I think it's if you have interests in becoming a developer advocate, you could probably get a job as an advocate by writing no code tutorials for anything under the sun. Right. So show someone how to build something with Webflow, or how to tie workflows together with Zapier, or how to do it with an Airtable or a Google spreadsheet or Excel or whatever the case may be. Show interesting ways to automate things and to think about how to solve problems. Doesn't matter if you've ever written a single like line of code, you may have never initialized a variable in your life. If you can figure out how to do that, you've shown your ability to think creatively and how to tie things together and solve some problems. If you want to become an engineer beyond that, that's cool. I also think that there's almost certainly companies who are hiring, I don't even know what you would call it, a no-code advocate, a non-developer advocate. And so you could go that route as well. One of the things that I did started a few years ago, which was a more of a way to get some creative energy out than like a cognitive or conscious approach to the field of developer advocacy, is I started a blog for myself. This is where you get the shameless plug. It's myownname.com, mikebyfulco.com, where I just started publishing like things that I learned that were like stuck in my craw. Like if something was bugging me and I finally found a solution online and it wasn't obvious, I would write a very simple like, hey, do you need to uninstall this from your Mac? Here's how you do that. Or, hey, I found out VS Code was running slowly on my new M1 Mac. Here's how I made it run more quickly. Those aren't necessarily like database tutorials. They're not product tutorials. They're just like, here's me writing a quick, I don't know, I had a problem, I fixed it thing. And that got me into the habit of writing stuff. It got me into the habit of turning on the part of my brain that looks for like friction and problems in my life that improved my own experience when I solved them. And it got me into the pattern of doing things that are like developer advocacy, which is definitely a convenience I had. I want to put a big giant caveat on that and kind of everything else I've said, that like I also had the luxury of time in my life and the privilege of not having to worry about, spending every day of my life like working for money at that point. I wasn't, you know, there's lots of folks who probably you and I know who are like in jobs that don't pay them enough to have time to start a blog. That's cool too. I don't think you need to do that. I think just showing some interest and showing some creativity is well more than enough to get you there.
That's interesting that you put a big emphasis on the power of creating content, right, in your own format. First of all, you gave really good advice where you had suggested kind of turning on that switch in your brain to solve the friction in your life, the problems in your life, and starting there maybe. Because I think even a lot of aspiring developers, they struggle, like, what do I build? That's a very, very common question I hear. And that's usually the advice I give them. Okay, well, what problems exist, right? And that's essentially how I got started in software engineering as a live streamer. I built an analytics tool for Twitch, and it was fun. I kept building features on top of it, and I knew the user, and because I was the user originally, and then I talked to other streamers. But that's essentially what got me my first job. So I like that advice. But also, I would argue, there is a situation where people don't really have that luxury and they have a full-time job or they have a family, they have other responsibilities, right? But essentially, you got to put time into something. You do to build up your skills on the side. And sometimes it's going to take a little bit longer. So I'm a big advocate of don't give people unrealistic expectations that, you know, they're just going to land their dream job without investing any extra time in. Right. Even for the people that do have to balance their time, if we had to compare getting involved in a GitHub issue in that discussion, or getting involved with the developer relations team at a company versus you creating your own content and showing an interest in wanting to create kind of tutorials and help essentially bridge certain gaps. What should, like, if you had to pick one thing, what would you probably prioritize your time with?
Yeah. Given the choice between the two, I would do whichever one you find yourself more fired up about.
Okay.
So if you have more passion for, hey, I tried to use your tool. I really want to use your library and there's so many problems with it, or I see these really easy areas for opportunity, go crack open a bunch of issues on GitHub, start some discussions, give good feedback, provide, meaningful descriptions and give feedback in good faith. Don't just say this thing is terrible, but say like, hey, I like what you're doing here, but here's an opportunity for improvement, right? Do the things that you would want to see if someone was giving you feedback. That's awesome. I think if you have the energy to do that, and if there's something that has inspired you to do that, that's super meaningful and is a great example. And you can link to all of those things in most cases too, and say like, here's a portfolio of all of the issues I've given feedback on GitHub in the last 6 months or year or 2 years or 5 years or whatever makes sense. Whereas it maybe you like waking up on a Sunday morning and having a cup of coffee and writing a little tutorial on like, you know, here's what I did to make this cool TikTok video this week, or even here's a tutorial on like how I rebuilt my Game Boy Advance from 2003 or whatever the case may be. If you have energy to do it, that will show through, and I think your passions will open the door for you just as much as your ability to communicate. So marrying those two things together in kind of either case, I think, is going to be good. It just depends on where you're at and what is going to actually get done for you. Because I think it can be easy to say like, oh yeah, I just need to go open more GitHub issues or participate in more GitHub things. And then like, I don't know, what are you going to do? Spend your time looking for broken things and try and, hunt down bugs and be helpful that way. Like, to me, that feels like something that could go down a dark pathway pretty quickly. But if you already have an idea of something that like, oh yeah, I was using this thing and I would love if it did X, Y, and Z, and here's what I'm going to suggest for help, go do that. That's awesome.
I like that. You've given a lot of different options, and it's a very unique perspective on how to even approach this career path, but like just career paths in general, to realize there's no, even with software engineering, there's not a super linear path. Like my whole channel is based on reviewing a bunch of different paths, right? So there are a lot of golden nuggets of advice here. I'm going to challenge you with this because I think you're pretty passionate about what you do. You enjoy what you do. And that comes off in the way you talk about it. So hopefully this challenges you.
Sure. Fire away.
What do you hate about your position?
That is a good challenge for sure. So I think one of the things I find most frustrating about this type of job is a tendency to see things in the short term versus the long term. And this is something that can be probably true for other engineering roles, but I'm going to kind of give you the story from a developer advocate's position. If I'm going and testing out a new feature for, doesn't matter what the product is, right? If you started a company, you hired me as a developer advocate, I'm testing out something and I give you feedback that like, hey, this works, but it could be better if we did this, this, and this. You as the owner of the business have a stack of hundreds, dozens, whatever, of priorities that you need to get done. The feedback I've given you feels very important to me because it's the pain that I've just gone through. But you may not get to go implement that for weeks, months, years, maybe never, depending on where that lines up in the bigger picture of things. And there are a lot of things that feed into that. It could be how well the business is doing, where the money is coming from for the business. It could be that I've completely misinterpreted the size of the problem, or just that focus has changed. And sometimes it's really, really frustrating to be like, all we got to do is this. If we do this one thing, it's going to be amazing. Like the sky is going to light on fire. They're going to throw us a parade. Like rainbows will shoot out of my eyes, whatever the case may be. If that doesn't happen, and that can be really frustrating. And sometimes you need to be able to like unplug and say like, my own personal value, the satisfaction I'm deriving from this thing is not from solving any specific problem. It's from building out a series of improvements and suggestions for improvements that over the long term will benefit this product. And really in the end will benefit the developers who are using the thing. Because my job is to make those developers better, hopefully by making my company better too.
I can see that being frustrating. I really can. And from my own experience, even as a developer, even bringing up the amount of technical debt that we're going to be experiencing because we rushed this implementation, and knowing, it might be 6 months before we reapproach this. I mean, I have some pride as a developer and I'd like to tackle that early. You're good. with the audio. The thing is, what's really difficult about that, it almost feels like the product really grows on you potentially. You kind of get attached to it. You, like you said, you go through the emotion of that bad experience that you just went to, and you empathize with the user that's going to go to that same bad experience. I can see that being really frustrating for that issue to get pushed off a year down the road.
Yeah, it can be frustrating. And sometimes you do get the other side of it where like 18 months, a year down the line, it gets fixed. And maybe you forgot about it, or like it's become a less red hot thing for you. And it's really, really pleasant when that happens. And that's good news too. But the reminder, the continual reminder, is that like the goal is not to fix any one thing. It is to make sure that the thing is continually improving. The other side of this that I'll say, that's probably an important thing with developer advocacy that can be frustrating, that I don't have a solution for, and I don't know if anyone really does, is like the longer I'm in my role and the longer I'm implementing things and testing out libraries for Stripe and building with the tools that Stripe makes, the farther away I am from someone who's never seen this thing before. And the harder it gets for me to relate to someone who's never seen the documentation before, or who's never taken a payment online. And as a former user experience researcher, right, there's like a real value to being fresh on a problem and not having this sort of snow blindness of being super familiar with it. And losing that empathy for someone who's new to the problem set that my company is trying to solve is like an impossible consequence, or, you know, unfortunate consequence of the work we do. And so the other side of this is that you have to keep reminding yourself that you always know more than the person who's implementing this on the other side of the fence. They know more about their problems. You know more about your problems. And the key to getting things done is communicating that well and being effusive and understanding and sympathetic to the position that they come from. And in a sense, maybe the answer is hiring more people, having more people come, or just doing more UX-y type things where you just observe someone using something for the first time and like remind yourself of what that pain is like. That's a big pattern I think I've seen in my career. And one of those things that's just like, that's maybe the Shakespearean curse of being a super experienced developer advocate at any company, is like, yeah, you can do this stuff with your eyes closed. And that's not always useful from the perspective of the devs who are using your tools.
That's a really interesting perspective. I feel like a lot of people would probably empathize with it in your position. Do you feel like you almost have to like really sell your proposed change, and sometimes even talk about it from like propose it as like a financial gain down the road for executives to be able to take it a little bit more seriously and prioritize it?
That's one of those things that just depends, I think, on the state of the product and the size of the problem. There are certain things that are like, hey, if I found this problem and it puts everyone in the world's bank accounts in danger, then like, oh yeah, they're going to mobilize a giant army to fix that as quickly as possible. Being able to put things into context of like, here's a problem we found, an area for opportunity for improvement. This is the size of the bread box that we're dealing with. This is what I think we would need to do it. And here's the benefit in the end. Doing that honestly is important, more so than like trying to make it sound important in an outsized way. Because again, it all comes down to that stack of priorities that the business has, that they need to figure out where this problem sort of slides into the rest of the priorities. So being hyperbolic and making things feel like they're much worse than they are is not a good thing. But instead, giving honest feedback, and the size of the feedback should match the size of the problem as well as possible. And also being open to people saying like, I don't think you understand that. Maybe this isn't really the problem you think it is, or here's how we thought about it, or here's how we got there, and kind of remembering that context as you go through is important. With that being said, just like any other job, like if there's something that you came across that was like, oh, this is something that we really, really need to fix, we need to plug this hole or the ship is going to sink, you need to know when to raise those alarms and do that well, or otherwise you're going to kind of get the cried wolf effect, right? Where like every problem I bump into can't be the biggest one in the world, because then they all sound small.
That's really good advice for any position, honestly.
Yeah.
You really did an excellent job going over so many variations of what this position holds and kind of paths getting into it. Very articulate. I feel like I have a much better sense of what developer relations is like. This is helpful. Is there anything else that you would add for anyone that potentially is interested in this position?
Yeah, I think we talked about it a little bit, but the value of diversity of backgrounds is really interesting and useful for developer advocacy. My team that I work on at Stripe is a global team. We're very small. We're about 10, maybe 12 people distributed around the world. And that's important and interesting and useful because taking payments around the world is very different. There are places where taking cash is the norm. There are places where only credit cards are used. There's places where it's in the middle. There are places like Japan, where there are local payments methods that are very different from anything I've used in the US, that are completely normal. And as a US-based developer advocate, I don't really understand like the cultural implications of that. So my team has folks from around the world who have a diversity of backgrounds, which is really cool. Another sort of filter on that is that language is important. If you and I were building a product and suddenly we discovered that most of our users were in Germany, we would probably want to make all of our stuff available in German, but also probably have someone who understands German to make sure that we're conveying the information correctly and we're not missing cultural cues and things like that. So one of the fundamental good things about developer advocacy is that, like, if you're lucky and you're working on a team with a product that is successful and well-funded and the organization understands it well, you should be working with people from all over the place who are very different from you, who have a number of languages under their belt, who've been building software in different ways for a long time. And there are so many different ways to get different types of developer advocates that, like, that's why there's not a cookie cutter developer advocate job role or path to getting to developer advocacy. And ideally, more companies will hire more people from more places who are doing more things. And frankly, between you and me, you and me in the audience, not just hiring engineers from Silicon Valley to build, you know, APIs and tools for people in Silicon Valley, like the further away we get from that, the more diverse and better products we're going to build for the world. And the more we're going to solve problems that help people who, you and me, Don, will never actually meet, but will find value. And I think that's a really, really cool thing.
I love it. You really sold this profession quite a bit. I think it's pretty open to a lot of different backgrounds. And, you know, I didn't even think about it. Like, I can see companies, if they have customers that are in Japan or in Germany or something like that, like, it really seems like if people, so a lot of people that'll come to me with software engineering, or they want to become a software engineer, it could be a little bit harder when you're, for example, outside the United States, you want to work in the United States, or you want to transfer or get a visa or some variation, right? But it almost sounds like a developer advocate is a little bit more open to hiring people around the world that are going to be able to bring those cultures of their customers. That's interesting. So that's definitely something to consider.
Yeah. Hopefully at least that's the case.
Right. Yeah. That's the ideal position potentially. I have a good sense of this. I really appreciate this. I think I'm good on questions. If you're watching this video on YouTube, in the comments, let me know what you think about this position. Let me know if this is something that kind of appeals to you, or you just hate it. Like, seriously, let me know in the comments, because I'm curious. We're going to continue going over other positions. But Mike, if people want to reach out to you and anything else you want to shout out, where could they reach you?
Yeah, of course. So feel free to chase me down on Twitter. My handle is at Irreverent Mike, which hopefully I'll convince Don to drop in the description here. I also have a website, MikeByFulco.com, where I build things. I run a community of community for API developers called APIs You Won't Hate. And of course, if you're building a business and you're interested in building things with Stripe's tools, that's stripe.com, stripe.com/docs. And you can find hopefully everything you need there. And if not, please reach out to me on Twitter or wherever else you find me. I'm always happy to help.
Okay. I love that. And I don't mind doing a little shout out with Stripe. I use it as my payment processor, switched over from PayPal actually. So business. I appreciate your product.
Of course.
All right, seriously, Mike, thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks, Don. It's been a pleasure.